There's a lot of ideas about love out there. I think in some ways our culture is just as confused as these kids are about what love is sometimes, right? Some of them had some pretty good answers. The one girl said, love is like a lion. I don't even really know what she was getting at. I don't know if some five-year-old boy like broke her heart or whatever, but I've been trying to figure out what does that mean all week since I found that video. Today we're talking about love and trying to figure out what exactly does that look like. And it is a complicated thing. In the next 30 minutes we have together, we're not going to unpack it all, obviously, but there is one aspect of love that we are going to look at, and it's Jesus's command on how we are to love each other as the church. There's actually a priority that he puts on how we love each other. And in a lot of ways, I think the confusion we have in our culture sometimes is we use the same word, love, for everything, right? I love my wife. I love my kids. I love the St. Louis Cardinals. I love a Philly cheesesteak. But none of those things mean the same thing, right? I don't love my kids the way that I love my team, unless my team is playing really well and my kids are being ornery. Sometimes it is really close, actually. But those things are not equivalent to each other, right? In Jesus' time, in the ancient Greek language, there was actually many different words for love. In the New Testament, there are four different words that they used for love, and that helped kind of bring some clarity to, okay, what exactly are we talking about when I say the word love? There's a picture I think we have. So if you can read that. The first one is storge. That's the love between a family. The love we feel when we talk about our kids or our parents or our siblings. That is one word that is used for love. The other is philia. If you think about the city of Philadelphia, its nickname is the city of brotherly love. That is where that comes from. Love between friends. Eros, love between a husband and a wife. And this last one, agape, that is the love of God. That's the term most often used in the New Testament to talk about God's love for us. It was a word that they really had to invent in order to come up with something to describe God's love. The best definition for it is probably an unconditional love. See, whether we admit it or not, a lot of the times, the relationships that we have, we love as long as we get something out of it, right? If our friends reciprocate something back to us, then we love them. We enjoy spending time with them. Even our family. Sometimes we can be at odds with them if they don't return love back to us in the way that we want. A lot of it is based on condition. But God's love for us is unconditional. He loved us before we deserved it. He gave us grace when he had no business doing that other than for the fact that he loved us. And that is the love that we're going to look at today that Jesus talks about in John chapter 13. That's the passage we're going to start in. And here's some context for this passage. We're only going to read a few verses, but this is the setting of the Last Supper. Jesus and his disciples are in a room and they're having a meal together. This is the night before he is going to go to the cross, right before he goes to the Garden of Gethsemane to be arrested. He is having a meal with his disciples, and they come into this room and they gather, and the first thing that Jesus does at the beginning of the chapter is he washes the disciples' feet. That would have been a practice in this time. Usually there would have been maybe a servant or someone in the household that would have had this job, but their roads were dusty, they wore sandals, and so especially at a dinner that was important like this, it would have been a really important thing to have your feet washed before, because they ate around a table that was about knee high. And instead of sitting in a chair, they would have laid on the ground, kind of propped up on an elbow, and they would kind of eat with the other hand off the table. And so as you're laying out, your feet may be close to someone and things like that. And so it was a very important practice that, hey, whenever you come in, wash your feet off, kind of like we would take our shoes off maybe when we come into a house, right? Well, they come into the room, and none of the disciples take it upon themselves to do this. And so Jesus gets up, he takes off his outer garment, he wraps a towel around himself, and he kneels down and washes each of the disciples' feet. And it's this incredible picture of love, right? I mean, who wants to do that job? Who wants to lower themselves and humble themselves enough to wash someone else's feet? But Jesus does this for his disciples, and then he says this to them in verse 34. I give you a new command, love one another just as I have loved you. You are also to love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So a few things about this. He's speaking to them. He's saying, this is how you are to love each other, talking to other believers. But the first thing he says is, this is a new command. And that seems odd. If you know anything about Jesus, this isn't the first time he's talked about love. At another point in his ministry, he's questioned, actually. Someone comes up to him, and they say, hey, what is the most important commandment? They're trying to test him and trap him. And he quotes from the Old Testament. He says, the first commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second one is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. And so how is this a new command? Well, for really what's happening, he is redefining it for them. He says, yes, you know that you're supposed to love God, you know that you're supposed to love other people, but what I'm talking about here is a different kind of love. I'm saying love like I have just loved you. I've set the example for you, I've done this and shown you what this looks like, and it's not something you haven't heard other than what I'm saying is you need to love unconditionally. See, in some ways, the command to love someone else the way we love ourselves, we can limit that, right? If there's a situation that arises and maybe we feel a tug, like I should do something for that person, I should reach out to them, I should try to help them, I should show love to that person, but I don't know, no one's ever done that for me, so we can let it go, right? Loving someone else the way that we love ourselves, There's a limit to that. But Jesus gives us a whole new command. He raises the bar and says, no, you are to love the way that I have loved you. Much more than people deserve, much more than you've ever given before. Pour yourself out over and over and over again to love people in a way that I have loved you. That's the new command. And then he says, and make sure you're doing this to each other. He mentions, that way the world will know that you are my disciples. The way that we love is so important for the rest of the world to see, hey, there's something different about the person who attaches the name of Christian to them, that they're just different. They love each other differently than any other group I've ever seen before. And so, as I was thinking about this, how do we love each other well? How, as a church, do we come together and show this kind of love? And the first thing I thought of was, if we are going to love each other in this way, it's a really simple thing, but the first thing is that we just have to be around each other. You know, in so many ways, you can't love someone if you don't know what's going on in their life. You can't love someone if you have no idea about what their week is like or the things that they're dealing with. And in return, you can't be loved by someone who doesn't know what you're going through or what you're struggling with. See, the truth is, we can't live out this commandment. We can't love each other the way that Jesus says we are to love each other if we're not in each other's lives. We've been putting an emphasis this entire year on getting involved, getting into groups, getting into places of service. And this is one of the main reasons why. Because if we are not sitting with other believers, if we are not hearing about what is happening, then how are we to love each other? That's why it's so important to get into a Sunday school class, get into a small group, get into an area where you're serving alongside of other people, stay for fellowship meals, or just stick around after church and visit. One thing that we talk about a lot as the leadership, we love just part of the culture of this church, is how many people just stand around and visit after the service lets out. A while back, we live right next door, and so it just makes sense that we would lock the doors up, right? And in the past, I would kind of wait around, and everyone would leave, and I would lock the doors. Well, a while back, I just like, listen, I'll just come back in the afternoon, because I'm not waiting for all you people to get done talking, right? And some of that is because, you know, kids came along, and they're needy and things like that, but it's a great problem to have, that, okay, I'll just come back over in the afternoon and lock the doors up because people are standing around visiting with each other. It's such a good thing. And so I would encourage you to get in on that. Become part of those groups. Make relationships so that not only you can love them, but so that you can get the benefits of being loved by other people. That you can have prayer warriors in your corner for the things that you're going with and people to be able to encourage you and just lift you up in those ways. We can't fulfill this commandment unless we are around each other doing that. But more specifically, John, who he's at this meal, he would have had Jesus wash his feet, he's writing this book. He gives more of this in a later letter, 1 John chapter 3. He writes about what this kind of love looks like. And starting in verse 16, he says this: "This is how we have come to know love. He laid down his life for us. We should also lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has this world's goods and sees a fellow believer in need, but withholds compassion from him, how does God's love reside in him? Little children, let us not love in word or speech, but in actions and truth." There's five things we see in this short passage where John gives us a little bit more of a definition. Hey, this is what Jesus taught us. This is what I'm talking about of what it looks like to love each other well. And the first thing he says is that love is sacrificial. It says he laid down his life for us and we ought to lay down our lives for each other. And we know, if we think about it, that love does come with a cost usually, right? Especially if we're going to love in this way. It's going to cost us our time. It's going to cost us our energy. There's times where we just don't think, I don't have anything else to give to this person. Like, my week has been crazy. I've dumped everything out that I can. I have nothing else to offer. And Jesus says, when you feel like that, love anyway. When you're empty, keep loving. Keep pouring out. And that's a hard command, and we'll get to in a second how we do that, but that's the command. It makes me think of a time in Jesus' ministry in Matthew chapter 14. John the Baptist has just been beheaded. His friend, his cousin, has died. And it says Jesus sought solitude. He tried to get away by himself, and he leaves, and he comes back, and the crowd has followed him like they always do. And it says when he saw the crowd, even though he was in a space where he was like, I don't want to be around people, I need to spend alone time with God, I need to get re-energized. When he saw the crowd, it says he had compassion on them. Even Jesus, when he gets to this point where he's like, I don't think right now I'm able to do ministry. Maybe that's not the right word. Jesus can do anything he wants. But he's at this point where he's saying, I just need some time away. And he sees the crowd and says, okay, time to love them anyway. He has compassion on them. And that's the call he puts on us too. Even when we don't think we have anything else to offer, he says, love anyway. The next thing he says is love with materials. He says, we should also lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has this world's goods and sees a fellow believer, again, emphasis on the church, in need, but withholds compassion from him, how does God's love reside in him? So often, this is a difficult thing for us too, right? We enjoy our money, we enjoy our possessions. It's hard sometimes to see a person in need and want to reach out to them and extend help to them. I came across a quote from C.S. Lewis that I think, to me at least, makes a lot of sense in terms of maybe why we hold back in this area in particular. His quote says this, "It is easier to be enthusiastic about humanity with a capital H than it is to love individual men and women, especially those who are uninteresting, exasperating, or otherwise unattractive. Loving everybody in general may be an excuse for loving nobody in particular." And I think there's a lot of truth to that. So maybe I've fallen into this boat before where I feel like, hey, there's a need that needs met. It's like, well, I've given my money to the church. The church will meet the need. And we love everyone in general. We put everyone under the same umbrella and say, well, I've helped people before. Like, I love all people. I think everyone needs grace. And we forget that, okay, there's individuals who we need to reach out to as well. There's individuals who need our care, who need our encouragement, who need our love. And sometimes, like he says at the end of that first sentence, we just don't want to get involved because people are messy. There's the kind of the joke among preachers that, like, man, ministry is easy except for the people. And that's kind of how it is, right? That so often we can stand back and say, I can't love like that because people's lives are complicated. And some people just need a lot of love, and they will drain your time and they will drain your energy. And time after time after time, there's something going on in their life, and it can just be hard to love like that. But that's the command. The next thing he says in verse 18, let us not love in word or speech, but in action and truth. He's not saying not loving with words. It's better translated, let us not love only in words. Obviously, words are a huge part of how we love each other. A few months ago, we've been trying to get these men's groups kicked off in the church, and a lot of those have been started and are meeting together, which is just really exciting. And there was a group of us that tried to get together to figure out, okay, what's this going to look like and how are we going to do this? And in that core group, before we launched all the others, about 2 months ago, Jeff Smith sent a message to our group. He was spurred on by a verse about encouragement, but he sent this message out and he just started listing these qualities about the guys in this group. And just being encouraging, being loving, and just saying, like, hey, I see this in you and I appreciate it. Thank you for this. And, man, it was awesome. And then the rest of the guys started responding to each other about, hey, like, this is what I appreciate about you, and this is what I love about you. And obviously, encouragement like that is a wonderful thing no matter what. But it's pretty rare for men to talk like that, right? I could probably count on one hand, besides someone in my family, that another man that I've been like, hey, man, I love you. And for Jeff to, like, initiate that was just so refreshing and so good, and it was such a good reminder of what words do to lift us up and to help us show love to one another. So who this week needs a word from you? Who needs a text, a note, a call to go grab a cup of coffee? Who in your life do you just need to pour into and just say, hey, listen, I appreciate this about you. I love this about you. I am thankful for who you are and what you've done, who this week do you need to give a word of love to? And then he says, not only should we love in word, but in action. See, sometimes I think we could fall into the trap, and maybe that's all we ever do is we say, I love you. We rely on that, but we never actually do anything to show people love. Dave Simmons was a minister and an author, and he tells a story, this was years ago, that he had taken his kids to the mall, and they were like 7 and 5, and he was going to a hardware store to try to get a new tool, but there was a petting zoo set up at the mall, and so this tells you how long ago this was. He was just going to let his kids go to the petting zoo, and he was going to go to the store, and so he gave each one of them a quarter, and sent them off, took steps towards the store, and pretty quickly his daughter started following him, the older one. And he was surprised. He's like, why would she want to come to the hardware store with me instead of going to this petting zoo? And so he, you know, asked her what was going on. And she said, oh, well, Dad, it costs 50 cents per person. So I gave my quarter to my brother, and I'll just come along with you. And he was so touched by that. And so after he bought his tool, they went back to the petting zoo, and they stood there, and they watched her brother get to pet the animals and stuff. And he was like, man, there was 50 cents burning a hole in my pocket. Like, I so badly wanted to give her two quarters. But she had said this phrase that they'd been trying to instill in them. It was almost like a family motto, that love is action. And that's what she said whenever she explained. She said, I gave my brother the quarter because love is action, Dad. And so he didn't give her 50 cents. He stood there by her and watched as her brother got to pet the animals because he didn't want her to miss that lesson. She was starting to grasp it, and he wanted her to understand, yes, love is action. It requires that we do something. It goes beyond just words. Sometimes it means that we do for other people. We meet a need when we can. We do whatever it takes to show people love through our actions and not just our words. And then the very last thing he says is that the way we love unconditionally, the way that we love the way that Jesus loves us, is with truth. That sometimes the uncomfortable thing about love is that it requires us to be truthful with the people who are around us. Sometimes that means telling someone when their life isn't lining up with how they're claiming to be a follower of Jesus. Sometimes that means having a difficult conversation with someone and being open to other people having those same conversations with us, that we are willing to let people tell us, hey, this part of your life isn't lining up with what a disciple of Jesus looks like. That when you said this, it's not in line with how Jesus calls us to live. That when you've done this over and over again to me, that's not okay, because that's not who Jesus has called us to be. Oftentimes, love requires us to have some hard, truthful conversations. And I think, more often than not, most of us are really good about calling out the sin of the world and really bad about calling out the sin of our brother. And that's something that really has to change. That we are so good about looking at a culture who never agreed to follow Jesus in the first place and pointing out all the ways that they have messed up. But we hold our tongue when it's the person sitting next to us, and we don't say, hey, listen, this is a hard truth, but I'm telling you this because I love you, because I don't want you to stray, because I don't want you to walk away from who you're claiming to follow. Sometimes those conversations are necessary. So all of that is a pretty hard command. And I think there's a reason Jesus uses the word command, is because it's not something that comes easily to us. It's not something that we want to do oftentimes. And at the end of this passage, skipping down to verse 23, he kind of gives us some hope and this is how you are to do this. Verse 23 says, "Now this is his command, that we believe in the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another as he commanded us. The one who keeps his commandments remains in him, and he in him. And the way we know that he remains in us is from the Spirit he has given us." It's funny how God works. In John chapter 15, the passage that Cooper used earlier for our communion meditation, John talks about this idea. He's used that word, remain, here in 1 John. And in John 15, in just a few short verses, he uses that word like 9 or 10 times. Some of your translations may say abide, some of them say remain. But the idea is you have to stay connected to Jesus in order to love the way that he's asking us to. Here's what verse 1 says. "I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. Every branch in me that does not produce fruit, he removes, and he prunes every branch that produces fruit so that it will produce more fruit. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, and I in you. Just as a branch is unable to produce fruit by itself unless it remains on the vine, neither can you unless you remain in me." So it's a difficult command, but John reminds us, hey, there's a way to do this, and it's to stay connected to Jesus. See, on our own, we are not capable of loving like this. On our own, we are not capable of loving sacrificially or with the materials the way that we should. We're not capable of the words and the actions and the truth and the way that Jesus calls us to without being connected to him. So it's just like a branch that is removed from its vine can't produce anything. We don't produce this kind of love if we're not connected to God. If we're not in the Word on a regular basis, if we're not spending time in prayer, if we're not connected to other believers, growing with each other, then we are incapable of loving like this. And I heard a guy talk about verse 2 in particular here this week, and I love the insight that he brought to this verse, because it really does, I think, give hope for, okay, this is how this is possible. Because this is a hard thing that Jesus is asking us to do. But in verse 2, he says this, "Every branch in me that does not produce fruit, he removes." And that word for removes, actually there's another meaning that it has, and it means to lift up. Some of your Bibles might even have a footnote in there that says, I think the New King James Version for sure has a footnote that says, this word could also mean to lift up. And one picture is of, okay, we're cutting this away and we're throwing the branch out. The other is that we're coming alongside and we're elevating the branch and raising it off the ground. And if you think about a vineyard, this makes a lot of sense. If you've driven through maybe central Missouri or someplace around here where there's many vineyards, you'll see them up on trellises growing and they're off the ground, right? Well, in this time period, that's not how it worked. They would just grow on the ground, and when it came time, the gardener would come along and he would lift the branch up and maybe put a rock under the fruit, or he would take a stick and stick it in the ground and help to, you know, with maybe a Y shape to lift the branch up. Because if a fruit is on the ground, it's way more susceptible to disease and way more susceptible to insects, and it's not going to produce fruit the way that it should, right? And I think what John is getting at here is Jesus gives us some really difficult commands, and he tells us to do things that are impossible for us to do on our own. But he also gives us this hope, and he says, but if you stay connected to me, I will help you bear fruit. What I'm asking you to do, I'm not just going to leave you to do it by yourself. I'm going to help you to do it. I'm going to lift you up so that you bear fruit. The places in your life that aren't showing this kind of love, if you will stay connected to Jesus, He says, I will come alongside and I will sanctify those areas so that you begin to produce fruit. And the thing that I love about this is this idea of God lifting us up. There's one other verse that comes to mind. It's in Psalm chapter 3, verse 3. David writes this psalm after he's been on the run from Absalom. Absalom is his son who has taken over the throne. He's driven David out and he has tried to kill him. And David writes these words in the midst of that happening. It says, Lord, how my foes increase. There are many who attack me. Many say about me, there is no help for him in God. But then verse 3 says this, but you, Lord, are a shield around me, my glory, and the one who lifts up my head. God is the lifter of our head. Think of this picture. Maybe you've had a kid who's fallen and he's hurt their knee and he's just distraught over what's going on and he can't focus on anything else, and so you have to go over and you have to get his attention on you, right? Maybe you walk over there and you actually grab his face and you lift it up and you say, hey, look at me, you're okay. Or maybe it's the person who they're so ashamed of what they've done, they don't want to look you in the eye. And so you have to reassure them and come alongside them in love and say, hey, look at me. Lift your head and look at my eyes. I forgive you. It's okay. Or the person who is so distraught and so depressed about the sorrow in their life, Jesus comes along and he says, hey, let me lift up your head. When you don't have the strength to do it yourself, let me come alongside and lift you up and comfort you and give you peace and give you strength. That is who our God is. He is the lifter of our head. And that is the God who says, if you will stay with me, if you will remain in me, I will help you bear this fruit that I've called you to. I will help you love in the way that you've never thought possible. I will help you to love one another the way that I have loved you. And so this week, what does that look like for you? Who are the people that you need to show love to? What area do you need to focus in on and say, okay, God, this is the area I know that I'm not good at producing fruit in, but I want to stay close to you and I want you to help me. Would you pray with me?